All right. My name is Megan Folater, and I am doing an oral history interview with Jillian Jacklin. Jillian, could you say your name or introduce yourself?
Yes. Hi. My name is Jillian Marie Jacklin.
Great. And we are conducting this oral history interview on August 7th, 2012. And we are going to be talking about Jillian's experiences as a graduate student during the 2011 protests at the Wisconsin State Capitol regarding the budget repair bill. And Jillian, to start with, could you tell me a little bit about why it is that you became a graduate student?
Sure. Well, I'm a graduate student in the Department of History. I study labor and working class history, and I focus on political activism and working class culture. I became a graduate student in an interesting sort of a way. I was most interested in potentially working abroad, maybe for the State Department, something like that. But my senior year of college, I went to UW-Madison as well for my undergraduate career, and I took a seminar with Camille Guerin-Gonzalez about memory and place in Chicano and Latino history, and it sparked my interest in pursuing a graduate career in history. And took a couple years off, and I worked as the academic department specialist for Chicano and Latino studies here on campus, and prepared to apply for graduate school. And I started in fall 2008 in a joint MA and PhD program in history, and just completed my fourth year.
Great, great. What drew you to the research interests that you have?
Definitely. I grew up in Appleton, Wisconsin, which is in the Fox River Valley in northeast Wisconsin. And my mother is a domestic worker. My father is, he's recently retired, but he was an outside salesman for a place called Contractor Supply and Equipment. And my stepfather is a Finnish carpenter and grew up on the lower echelons of the class system in the Fox River Valley, and sparked my interest in labor history and wanting to learn about workers and people that are maybe less likely to be a part of history because of sources or because of interest or because of financial reasons. So I really wanted to tell the story of my family.
Great. So you certainly have had some labor consciousness throughout your life. Do you recall when it was that you first became involved in politics and labor activism?
Yeah, definitely. I actually remember becoming politically active as an elementary school kid. One of the first things that I remember about like protesting something that I felt was maybe against my understanding of social justice was when I was in fifth grade, and my teacher at the time decided that, well, he told the women in the class that women should not learn science or math. So during science and math time, we were told to sit in the hallway and read. So I recall, at least the way that I remember it, was, you know, getting more and more upset about this and talking with my fellow classmates, and we went on to tell the guidance counselor and the school principal about what was going on, and heard that he was fired because of it. I'm actually not certain that that's the reason he was let go, but that's like one of the first times I remember being politically active.
And that was in the 1990s then, or?
Yeah, that would have been in the 90s, wow. Early okay. 90s.
All right. When did you first associate with the TAA?
I first became a member of the TAA my first semester of graduate school, but I was aware of the TAA from being an undergraduate, actually, at UW, and always went to my TAA's offices. You know, I think that I knew from early on that the TAA was important for protecting the jobs and rights of teaching assistants across campus. It was a lot less likely that I would go to visit a professor. I felt a lot more comfortable speaking with TAs, especially on such a gigantic campus, and being a first-generation low-income college student, I didn't have a lot of contact with people who had been in school, especially as I became more interested in graduate school, really sort of reaching out to TAs and learning about the lack of income and the sort of like indentured servitude on that TAs experience, as far as like a lot of work, little pay, no vacation, not a lot, ton of benefits, things of that nature. So when I was an undergraduate in the early 2000s.
Okay, great. Do you recall when you first became a member of the TAA?
I became a member of the TAA in fall 2008, my first semester of graduate school, when I was a project assistant.
Great. Have your interactions with the TAA changed at all during your years of graduate study?
Yeah, they have. My first couple of years in the TAA, I wasn't very active. I didn't attend meetings. I read the emails that I received and would vote when they were electronic votes and so on, but I didn't attend a meeting until the fall 2011, right before the debacle with the budget repair bill, because I found that it was seeming that our rights as TAs were going to be further restricted than they already were. So I decided to become more involved and attend meetings. And just this past summer, I become even more involved, went to a leadership retreat, and I'm going to be serving as a steward and on both the Labor Solidarity and the Diversity Committees this fall of 2012.
Great. And just to confirm the dates that you were mentioning, so you became more involved in the fall 2010 semester before the protests?
Yes.
Okay. And then for this past summer, you're thinking of summer 2012?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Summer 2012.
Great. And let's take a look at the spring of 2011 a little more closely, too. Did you have an assistantship during that semester?
I was a TA that semester.
Okay. Do you have an assistantship now, or perhaps more closely looking at previous spring semester or the upcoming fall semester?
Yes, I was funded both in spring of 2012, and I am also funded this coming fall, 2012.
Okay. Great.
Both TA ships.
Okay. So what classes have you been TAing during this time?
So the past three, this will be the third fall semester that I was a TA for Integrated Liberal Studies 209, which is Introduction to Global Cultures with Professor Joe Elder. So this will be my third time this fall teaching that. And then I taught one semester History 462, History of the American West. A graduate student was lecturing at that point. And then this past spring I TA'd History of American Foreign Relations 434 with a lecturer as well in the history department.
Great. Okay. Could you describe your involvement in the protests in the TAA during the winter and spring of 2011?
Definitely. So in the spring 2011, I heard about the budget repair bill. I mean, I was aware that Governor Scott Walker was not necessarily friendly or in favor of unions, and that there could be some threat to my job as a teaching assistant. But also beyond just my concern for myself, being concerned about the working class in the state of Wisconsin. And so I remember receiving a call was the first, do you recall the budget repair when people were testifying? Was that at the beginning of February?
I believe so. Let's see. I believe that the protests were going to begin in mid-February.
Oh, yes, so. With the I Heart Walker campaign. So I remember the TA coming around to history department offices with the Valentines for Walker about the budget repair bill and what it could mean for graduate assistantships on campus. And I received a call the morning, I'm not sure which date it was exactly, from Naomi Williams, who was very active in the TA at that time, saying that they, asking if I would please come to the Capitol to wait in line to testify in front of the state legislature about the budget repair bill, to sort of like hold the TA spot because people had to teach, people had to go to class. And I maybe taught in the afternoon that day, but I may have had the day off, I can't remember. But I went, got in line, took over Naomi's spot and sat with a couple other graduate students at the time. And ended up being the second graduate student to testify in front of the state legislature. There were a couple people that were invited by some Democratic representatives, Lena Taylor. I'm trying to remember the other woman who had some people come. But there were a couple people who testified, and one of them was a young woman about my age, probably her mid to late 20s, who was a mother of two, and discussed, she was a CNA, discussing her job and what the potential increase in the cost of benefits would mean for her livelihood and the livelihood of her children. She explained what she did on a daily basis as far as her job was concerned, and then went on to say that, like, at that present point, at the beginning of February 2011, she couldn't afford to put her kids into organized sports or, you know, do some of the things that that parents like to do for their kids. And I just, like, felt, like, really hit by that because I was in a similar situation when I was a kid, my parents struggling to be able to put me in the things that I wanted to do, similarly for my brother. So she testified, and a couple other people testified about, like, what the budget repair bill would mean for their daily life. And one graduate student testified before me, Mike Amato, and then I testified. It's the way I remember it anyways. You don't get a whole lot of time to talk. And this isn't the first time I've testified in front of the state legislature. I did as an undergraduate as well, the budget committee about funding for undergraduates, need-based funding. So I'd been in front of that committee before. There were a few familiar, though not so friendly, faces on the committee. I basically testified that I was a Wisconsin resident my whole life, that I'd been an undergraduate, that I was a first-generation low-income college student, that it was hard enough for me to be a graduate student as it was, financially speaking, and also culturally and, like, my history speaking, it's been a challenge. And so sitting in front of the committee and explaining the situation, that it was what it was going to mean for me, explained that I had only made about $9,000 the year before as a teaching assistant, working supposedly 17 hours a week, but many, many, many more hours than that. And then referenced back to the woman, the CNA, who had testified about her financial situation, what she did on a daily basis, and I said to the committee, like, basically, you know, look around, the people that you're looking to cut their benefits, they do types of jobs that a lot of people don't want to do. And I mentioned that, for instance, the woman who had been up, I can't remember her name, that she wiped our parents' asses. Like, she worked at a nursing home and she did a lot of things that people in the U.S. like to put their elderly people behind closed doors and not think about them or worry about what's going on. And when I said the word asses, the chair of the committee, there were actually two chairs. There was a male and a female. However, the male did most of the talking, and he asked me to leave. My time was pretty much up anyways, but he said that what I was saying was great until I used profanity. And a couple of the committee members cheered when I said that, and a bunch of people in the audience did, or other people waiting to testify. But he was upset by that. And I remember being really struck by what I viewed as a high level of sexism on the committee, particularly the chair and a few other members, like, for instance, not letting the female co-chair speak ever or seem to have an opinion. The two vocal people on the panel were both African-American women. I remember Lena Taylor shouting out, "You go, girl," when I said at the word asses. It wasn't why, but and leaving and then going to a conference room where there was live coverage of the testifying, and going in there and people like cheering about my testimony and thinking that it was just all so sudden, basically. But did you want me to continue to talk about what happened after that, or should we stop?
Well, sure. I certainly do want to hear a little bit more about your experiences as well. Although I do have a question or two for you regarding your testimony. When you went up to speak, had you thought through what you wanted to say, or could you give us a sense of level of preparation or the level of impromptu skills that were at play when you were speaking?
Sure, that's a really important question. I sat in line for probably an hour or so, and so I did write a lot of stuff down about my family and my past, thinking about what I wanted to say, but with the limited amount of time when you get up in front of everybody to talk and the committee to talk, it becomes a lot more impromptu. And so while I had anticipated talking more about my background, I ended up talking more about the state and the people who had testified before me, because I was really struck by their testimonies, because I saw my struggles as being a lot less profound after I heard other people testify. So
okay. Beyond or other than testifying before the hearing, what are your memories of the protests?
Sure. So I recall a lot of excitement. I recall a lot of stress. As TAs, there was basically a teach out called, where it was suggested that we not teach on campus or hold office hours or anything on campus. And feeling really stressed out about it. It was my first semester teaching with the history department and really wanting to do a good job and really caring about my students as well, and not, you know, having been an undergraduate at UW, just thinking like, wow, you know, these students are paying for this education, and not being there, but other people being stressed out about wanting to teach or not wanting to teach. And then also, I remember a lot of like excitement and feeling of solidarity. The first, one of the first times I went up to the Capitol after testifying, I remember the dome just being full of people and seeing so many people I knew, and then seeing professors I knew, and then I remember seeing my advisor with a big sign out shouting and protesting, and they gave me a really big sense of solidarity and feeling of like pride that we come from a community of people that care about other people's livelihoods, basically.
Yeah. Excellent. And I believe you mentioned working for this professor as an undergraduate, but could you just confirm who your advisor is for the tape?
Camille Guerin-Gonzalez.
Right. Okay. How frequently were you involved in the events at the Capitol?
I went up to the Capitol just about every day, and I never actually spent the night in the Capitol. I know a lot of people did, and there were lots of times I thought about sleeping in the Capitol. My partner, he's still my partner, he really didn't want me to stay in the Capitol. He was a little concerned about that, and as graduate students were pretty busy, so I had a lot going on, but having the flexibility in my schedule to take, and being close enough to the Capitol, working on campus. A really good friend of mine is, I kind of consider her to be a professional activist, and she was up at the Capitol just about every single day protesting. And I remember one day in particular, circling around the square. I can't remember what we were shouting, but she and I and her younger sister, who was a teenager at the time, finding a lone drummer or coming across him and drumming and chanting all around the Capitol, all down State Street, all around the Union for somewhere around 3 hours. And I recall not having a voice most of the time the protests were going on.
All right. Exactly. Yeah. Do you recall any chants in particular that you gave? I know it's been now about a year and a half.
Yeah. I'm not really remembering any chants off the top of my head.
Okay.
But I also kind of have a headache, so thinking hurts.
That works. How were you made aware of the events that were transpiring at the Capitol? How was it that you were following this news or these updates?
The TA sent a lot of emails. It was also like I walked home every day, so I would see people around the Capitol or with signs. It was kind of hard. It was pretty much in your face if you were on campus that protests were going on. And had a lot of other active friends in the community. I've lived in Madison for 10 years now and have a lot of friends who are state workers as well. A lot of people who are just allies for collective bargaining and union rights and working class rights in general.
Great. When the TA was sending you updates, were these coming by email or were you getting them through anything else?
Email, mainly. Could read them like in the newspaper, but I mainly through email. And I just remembered a chant.
Okay.
One of my favorites. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Scott Walker has got to go. Hey, hey, ho, ho, Scott Walker has got to go. I think that's the one that we were chanting when we were going through.
That sounds familiar. Great. Okay, so looking at the TA protests, or the Capitol protests, rather, both at the time and also now that there's been a little more perspective of the past year and a half, do you believe the media accurately represented the protests?
I do not. We would have to say particularly, you know, whether it was local or national media, I am not a big TV watcher. I haven't owned a TV in several years. And in fact, I don't follow the news much in general. But being on Facebook, it was almost impossible not to see media about the protest as far as like people posting links to stories about the protests. And there's one inaccurate representation, totally inaccurate representation that I remember. It was shown on Fox News, I believe, where there was, the media was hyping up that there was a lot of violence involved in the protests, and even local media, because family members of mine, conservative family members of mine who live in the Fox River Valley, saying that the protests were violent, and having been at the protests every day and never seeing any violence, being very disgruntled by hearing that information because the protesters were so peaceful in their demonstrations. Remember one, this one story that Fox News ran where they showed a bunch of people getting in a fight and things getting violent in the middle of a protest, and there were palm trees in the background, and there aren't palm trees in Wisconsin anywhere. Maybe some people are growing some in their house or something, but there aren't palm trees here generally. So as far as I'm concerned, there wasn't. I never saw any violence. So.
Okay, great. And your answer led to something else I was hoping to ask you about. Given that you grew up in Wisconsin, though perhaps not in Madison, you may have a bit of a different perspective on the protests than might some other graduate students who have only been here for the years of their study. What's your sense of the protests as a resident of Wisconsin, or at least so far a long-term resident here?
The area of Wisconsin that I hail from is characterized as a rather conservative and Republican area of the state. Though if you actually go and talk to people in the Fox River Valley, the answers to your questions would not necessarily line up with a particular political agenda. But I never saw protests like I did in Madison when ever in my life in Wisconsin. I did protest a president when I was in when I studied abroad in Ecuador, and I remember the excitement of being involved with that protest. That protest was violent. I did get injured during that protest. I was hit by a tear gas canister that was shot out of a tank, and I was asphyxiated for 4 hours in a Red Cross ambulance. And so I'd had sort of working class, or even just like protesting in general, I'd been involved before, but I'd never seen it in Wisconsin. And I was so happy to see how much solidarity there was and how much respect there was for workers. And I was particularly excited when I saw police officers and firefighters and other farmers and so on and so forth, tons of different professions coming together in solidarity for the same cause.
Great. Could you say a little bit more about your protest in Ecuador?
Sure.
Your work with the protesters.
Yeah. Good. That's so. In 2005, the spring of 2005, I studied abroad in Quito, Ecuador, for a semester. And while I was there, I was not very familiar with Ecuadorian politics at the time. But my host father was a sociology professor, and very knowledgeable, and he sort of informed me what was going on when everything was happening. But in Quito, there was a protest to overthrow the president at the time. The chant then was, Fuera Lucio, Fuera Lucio, which means out with Lucio, and Lucio was the president's last name. And a few American students were interested in participating in the protests. Protests in Quito at the time meant everything was closed. School was closed, stores were closed. People either stayed home or they were on the streets, and the streets were full of people protesting. And I remember being really scared because there was similarly a lot of interesting media information going around about people getting hurt, people, mercenaries being hired from the coast to come to Quito's in the mountains, but Ecuador is both coastal and mountainous. And people on the coast generally are not big fans of people from the mountains and vice versa. So there was news that maybe people would be coming from the coast to the city. I don't remember ever seeing that. There was some information that one person died during the protests. I don't know if that's accurate, but there was also information in that same article about people being asphyxiated from tear gas, and I know that to be true because I was there. I recall feeling like I was going to die when that happened. But so the story leading up to me being involved in an actual protest where I was injured was a number of my friends that were studying abroad. There were students from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, students from the University of Michigan, Michigan State, and also Virginia Tech. And a bunch of us, about 15 of us, decided that we were going to go to the president's palace to protest out in front of it because there was a major protest going on. And I remember being really scared about going and not wanting to go, but everybody was going. One of my friends is now a photojournalist, and she really wanted to go, take pictures. And we all piled in cabs down to the protest, and protests in Ecuador were really different. They were loud, there were lots of fires, there was a lot of music. People were very militant and in a sense of serious about what they were protesting, which was they wanted the president out. And just walking around and feeling like I was in a war zone, and then people all of a sudden running and trying to run and then getting hit with this tear gas shot out of a line, and then having all the tear gas come in and losing consciousness and feeling like how people say where everything sort of flashes before your eyes when you're gonna die. kind of thing, and waking up and being even more scared, and then everything just sort of cleared up and there was a new president.
Wow, yeah. So this was part of your study abroad as an undergraduate?
Yes.
Okay. And do you remember when this was happening?
It was in this was in, I feel like March or April of 2005.
Great. Given what you study as a history graduate student, what would you say is the relationship between your experiences in Ecuador, perhaps also at the Wisconsin State Capitol last year, and what you choose to do with your own studies?
Sure, I think that labor protest in general is what I study, so I think it's helpful to have firsthand experience in formulating a sense of passion for what one studies or is going to teach about or is writing about. And my dissertation, I will be writing about labor protest, working class militancy at the turn of the 20th century in the Fox River Valley in Wisconsin. But part of my argument is that there's a very fine line, and maybe there isn't a line at all, between what is considered militant and what is considered conservative. That people generally are fueled by what their understanding of survival looks like or what their understanding of livelihood is. And so especially getting together with a big group of people who are all fighting in solidarity for the same cause, but then talking to people and seeing the multiple different reasons that people are there, I think it's really useful and connected.
Great. So what are your plans academically?
At the end of August, so it's August 7th today, and on August 29th, I'm preparing to defend my dissertation prospectus. And then in the fall, I will be a TA again for ILS 209, and I will, I have planned a number of different research trips to the Fox Cities to start collecting research on my dissertation.
Yes. Great. How about politically? What are your future plans?
As I mentioned a bit earlier, I'm becoming more involved in the TAA. I'm really excited about being on the Labor Solidarity Committee and meeting with union activists, working class activists from around the state. Also, the Diversity Committee, I've already started to talk to different undergraduate groups as well as classified and academic staff groups across campus about creating more solidarity as far as student, worker, professor, administrative rights across campus as we prepare ourselves for the HR redesign that is about to start this fall.
Great. Do you have any final thoughts that you want to share about your experiences at the Capitol or anything else that we discussed?
I think that the last thing that I'd like to share is that one of my preliminary exam fields was social movement history. The other was labor history. And in the social movement history essay, I wrote about the long history of protest in the U.S. And particularly, well, the question asked which had more longevity, movements on the political left or movements on the political right, and I argued that movements on the political left have been more successful, and that they're really all part of the same movement, which is a struggle for freedom and social justice, and that this movement of the political left has been more successful because of its longevity, because of its mass appeal, and because of its creation and occupation of space. And so I think that these protests that we've been seeing in Wisconsin are part of that long history, and that the roots are very deep, and it's a very important struggle, personally as well as professionally for me. I think it's brought a lot of people to consciousness about the fact that a few people, not only in this country, but this globe, have control over the majority of resources. And I'm really interested in finding ways to spread out wealth so that people don't have to struggle as much.
Great. Thank you, Jillian.
Thank you, Megan.
This was a great interview, and I'm happy that you were able to give us some of your time to talk about this.
Thank you so much to Oral History Project.
All right. My name is Megan Flader, and I am speaking with Jillian Jacklin. Jillian, could you introduce yourself again?
Hi, I'm Jillian Marie Jacklin.
And it is August 7th, 2012, and Jill, I have just interviewed Jillian about the 2011 protests at the Wisconsin State Capitol regarding the budget repair bill. And Jillian would like to add a few additional comments to her interview.
Thank you, Megan, for giving me the opportunity to add a little bit. At the end of the last question that you asked me, I discussed a little bit about my preliminary examinations, which I took this past spring, the spring of 2012. And one of my fields was on social movement history, and the other being labor history, and both of them very much connected to the protests and the budget repair bill from that we've seen here in Wisconsin since the spring of 2011. And I wanted to add something. This February 2012, on February 10th, a very, very close friend of mine, somebody who I care very deeply about, he passed away. He actually, he took his own life. And he grew up in Appleton as well. He's one of my brother's closest friends and a member of our family, basically. And he grew up without a lot of money. And he talked a lot about that and struggled a lot because of that. He actually, one of the reasons that he joined the Navy after high school was so that he could get the GI Bill so he could go to college. And it wasn't the only reason, but it was one of the reasons. And the military really changed him. He went into the military feeling quasi, well, he was semi-homophobic, pretty racist. The military opened him up in so many ways. He met so many different people. He really changed his viewpoints and became really interested in history and basically human rights, social justice, things of that nature, and started studying LGBTQ studies when he went to UW-Milwaukee after his time in the service. And so he was a junior at UW-Milwaukee when he passed away in February, and he had a lot of interest in what I was doing as a graduate student, and particularly working class history and the fact that I was going to be writing about the Fox River Valley. And I recall in October taking a long walk with him along the river, the Fox River in Appleton, and discussing, talking about building a raft that he, like he did when he was a kid, and taking it down the river, and kind of made me excited to go back to Appleton to do research, because when I left home, I didn't really want to be journeying back much, but my research has made it so that I'm actually going to be writing about where I'm from. Anyways, so his name was Zach, and he talked a lot about sort of the injustice, like financially. He was very class conscious, and he when he passed away, he was an English major. Actually, it was comparative literature. And that day that we took a walk by the river, I was grading papers for him or comment, not grading papers, but offering comments on papers for him, editing papers for him. And every time we would get together, we would talk about school and history and things of that nature. And what I remember asking him that day we took a walk by the river, if, you know, he said he wanted to minor in something. I can't remember what he was thinking about minoring in, I think English. And I said, well, what about history? Like, what do you have against history? And anyways, I remember on his obituary, which was only a few months later, that it said that he was majoring in English and minoring in history. And I was really excited about that because I know that it was something that was very important to him. And so anyways, that same day that we were walking by the river, it's funny, we actually did have more than one encounter in our lives. We had several. We ran into some protesters that were involved with the same protests that we're talking about, which is the attack on workers' rights in Wisconsin. And just, you know, chatting with some of the protesters, why were they there? And they were from all over the state working on the recall election, Governor Scott Walker. And anyways, when Zach passed away, he was an amazing artist and writer, and he, his parents found a poem entitled Epitaph, which they think he may have written his own, but they're unsure. The details of his suicide being very sketchy, to put it mildly. But I just wanted to read this as an ending, because it's very much connected to social movement and labor history, as well as like the long struggle that this protest in Wisconsin is, the roots that it's drawing on. They run very deep, and they run as long as since the beginning of this country. And so this is by Zachariah Graham Cameron. Lay me down in the dark and deep, beneath the shade where the willows weep. Rest my head on the roots to sleep, and my soul to the angels to keep. For my life was lived full and grand, witnessed by the worked scars on my hand. See me someday next to the Lord I stand. May I say farewell to the worldly land. People that I love, don't worry. People I've wronged, I'm sorry. I'm riding now on heaven's ferry. Until we meet again, be merry. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jillian.
Thank you.